The Mark Stein Club Q&A, live around the planet, begins in 30 seconds.
Hey, this is Mark Stein. This Saturday, we have a great singer and her composer dad, a couple of songwriters with connections to the space program, and a couple of songwriters who thought their number one hits were rubbish. Plus, our Sinatra Sextet on the town Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. July 17th, 2024. It is 3 p.m. in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where two motorcycle cops have been kicked off the patrol for choosing to work the Trump rally rather than the Jill Biden event. 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland, and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, where His Britannic Majesty delivered the first King's Speech of Sir Keir Starmer's new ministry. 9 p.m. in Strasbourg, where the European Court has ruled that Cruella von der Leyen did not give the public sufficient access to the EU's COVID vaccine contracts with Big Pharma. 10 p.m. in Kyiv, where Zelensky has attacked the U.S. Republican vice presidential nominee, J.D. Vance. 10:30 p.m. in Tehran. For all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone, midnight 45 in Kathmandu. For all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone, and the new Nepalese Prime Minister, K.P. Sharma Oli. 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, 5 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, 7 a.m. in Auckland, and a rather more civilized hour for the kippers and kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. 10 years ago, that would be July 17th, 2014. The actress, singer, and grand showbiz survivor, Elaine Stritch, died. I shall have an Elaine Stritch anecdote for you on this weekend's edition of Mark Stein on the Town. That's 5 p.m. London time on Serenade Radio. Headline of the day from the Daily Mail in London. Secret Service spotted Thomas Crooks at Trump rally 3 hours before shooting. Yeah, it's been getting longer and longer. When seconds count, the Secret Service are 3 hours away from doing anything about it. We're also hearing that Thomas Crooks's parents spoke with Pennsylvania law enforcement on that day before the rally, although we don't know the substance of that conversation. The fireman who died at the event, he's described as retired because he did serve as a volunteer fire chief, and he retired from that volunteer position. But he's not retired. He's got a day job, like most volunteer firemen do, at least in my part of the world. Corey Comparatore, Trump, I forget when this convention wraps up, but Trump will more or less be going straight from the convention to Pennsylvania for the private funeral of Mr. Comparatore, who died because he went to a campaign rally in the America of 2024. You know my views on this. And I think as the timeline emerges, there's a very clear timeline now in the, I think it's the Financial Times. For some reason, you have to keep looking at the foreign press to try and figure out some of this stuff. But there's a rather good timeline in the Financial Times. I think Mr. Comperatore's family and the families of the other of the wounded people wounded at that rally, I believe you can sue the United States government for negligence leading to injury or death. And the negligence, which is putting it mildly, did in fact lead to the death of Mr. Comperatore and the injuries to the other. And I hope the families do sue them for that, for $300 million or whatever the usual amount is in America. Let's get to your questions. Maxine Fulbright writes, official excuse for no one on the roof, not safe for officers. Yeah, because the roof has got a very slight slope. Someone today posted a cow on a seriously pitched roof. And the cow's wandering around on the cow is perfectly fine wandering around on. Maybe they should make that cow a Secret Service agent. Maybe Trump could hire that cow who can pad around on the roof without difficulty for the next event. Official excuse for no one on the roof, not safe for officers. Fact, there are 9 options for rough terrain scissor lifts in Butler, Pennsylvania. The height option is from 26 feet to 50 feet. Platform capacity is 4 men or more. Weight capacity is from 700 pounds to 2,000 pounds, depending on height and model. Cost for rental, $240 per day to $655 per week. This search took me 5 minutes. Who is in charge of this fiasco? The village idiot. It's not possible. I know everyone quotes that line. You should never ascribe to malice what can be put down to incompetence. And that was a clever line back when we were genuinely self-governing societies with high degrees of public integrity. I don't think that's the case now. It is very difficult to come up with a village idiot so stupid as to make the decisions that were made minute by minute, hour by hour in Butler, Pennsylvania, just a few days ago. So I'm not inclined to put it down to village idiocy. You talk about all this stuff they could have got very easily, very low. I mean, for a start, the whole thing, you know, this idea that making someone go and up on a roof that's got a slight pitch. I am an effete ninny. I'm not a Secret Service agent. But I regularly, over my time in New Hampshire, have been prancing around up on the roof. I've done a bit of shingling up there. Had some little bit of leak in the when the snow builds up and then you notice it's dripping insides. I'm prancing around up on the roof, patching it, re-shingling it. I'm perfectly fine. And it's a much steep, it's a seriously steeper gable than this slight protrusion on this one here. They're laughing at us. It's very Soviet, in fact. As you know, the whole point about the Soviet Union's lies weren't to persuade you, and it's true of totalitarian societies in general, it isn't to persuade you of the truth, it's to force you to live with the lie, because that diminishes you as a human being. So if you're sitting there in your rec room watching the head of the Secret Service on television tell you that agents who are hired because of their willingness to take a bullet for the president can't be allowed on a sloped roof because it's in breach of health and safety. The point isn't to persuade you. The point is to say, yeah, it's a lie. What are you going to do about it? You're going to do nothing about it. You're going to swallow it as you swallow all the other lies. That's the point of it. Sam Williamson says, I've attended PGA events for non-Americans. That's golf. I've attended PGA events with stricter security. You can bring in binoculars to watch the golfers from afar, but you cannot bring in the protective case. Yeah, this is like this thing we're now in. Oh, yes, he had a rangefinder, laser rangefinder. Yeah, but that's not actually a weapon. A weapon. It might be suggestive of the fact that you have a weapon elsewhere. But it isn't itself a weapon, so we can't actually deny you entry for that. We have all this, as I mentioned, 2016 at a Trump rally, the Secret Service, my kid had just been in school that afternoon. He came out of school and he's ambling along the road and he sees a tennis ball in good nick on the road, and he thinks, oh, a tennis ball. So he picks it up and puts it in his pocket, forgets about it. We get to the Trump event at the Flynn Theater and in Vermont, and he suddenly remembers this tennis ball he picked up in New Hampshire. Well, he doesn't remember it. He's asked to turn out his pockets, and the tennis ball's in there. And the Secret Service confiscate the tennis ball. So you can't take a tennis ball into a Trump event, because that could be weaponized, but you've got a laser rangefinder, and oh, well, that's just one of the... None of it. Here's the point. The official version of events is not possible to believe. Jeff Estes writes, hi, Mark. I'd like to dispel the conspiracy rumors regarding the U.S. Secret Service. I spent 16 years in the agency, departing in 2002, and can affirm that at least during my tenure, the level of pride and professionalism was the highest, bar none. If I was to guess what has become of the agency, I'd suggest the move from under the Secretary of the Treasury into the DHS behemoth plays a large part, whereas all large organizations tend to be inefficient and poorly managed. The agency requires stacks of young men willing to devote their lives to the mission. Family be damned. There was an old saying that the U.S. Secret Service suffered from the Apache syndrome. They rode their horses until they died, then ate them. It's a job, unburdened by birthdays or Disney on Ice tickets. Glad to see your vim and vigor has returned. Thanks, Jeff. Well, as you say, Jeff, it was an agency of the United States Department of the Treasury until 2002, when it became part of the new Department of Homeland Security set up after 9/11. I objected to the creation of that department because it was a massive bureaucracy. And I objected basically on Thatcherite grounds, that if you create a bureaucracy to deal with a problem, you'll never be rid of the problem. And that's generally true. And I think almost everything that was moved within the new DHS, including immigration, for example, has, which was previously whatever it was, the INS, the Immigration and whatever, and Naturalization Service, everything that was moved into Homeland Security has gotten worse. But the other thing I would say is that things, institutions can change. We saw the weaponization of certain institutions under the Obama administration. That continued during the Trump interregnum. The only thing is that was different was that instead they became weaponized against their supposed boss, the head of the executive branch. And then we have what's happened since Joe Biden took over in January 2021. And I disagree with you, and with respect to the agency you knew, I don't think it's possible. And what I've had sort of odd little emails and comments and things back and forth the last few days. People saying, for example, well, just to go back what we were talking about, that if you thought the roof was too sloped, you could do something about that. Oftentimes, to neutralize a line of fire, they'll simply find some big obstacle to move in front of it. Like they'll get a big truck and park it in front of the line of fire. So you can, it's, you're no longer in the line of fire because you'd have to fire through the truck. It's striking to me how little of that, when you look at the scene as it unfolded, it's almost as if they clear, these are the some county fair farm grounds or whatever. I take it's like the one just down the road from me, you know, where they have barns for 4-H or whatever. I don't know what they do there, but I should imagine it's like an that kind of a site. And when you look at it, and it's interesting, when you go to these big events, what the shot with the president or the candidate or whatever is meant to look good. That's where they've got the 160 bazillion American flags behind him or whatever. And that shot looks good. And then you look off this way, that way, and it's all messy because, as I said, they moved in these obstacles where to prevent there being clear lines of fire. In this case, they permitted a clear line of fire to remain, a brilliant line of fire. I don't know whether you've seen, I think we posted one of them earlier, these reconstructions of the shot that have been done. The bullet, had Trump not turned his head, as Joe Biden noticed when he spoke to his predecessor, on that telephone call and said, why did you move your head to the right? And he must, you know, that might, when the bullet took off, the bullet was headed to hit him in the skull and have the skull explode on live TV. And he turned just beforehand, and he turned just enough so that instead the bullet hit his ear like a giant mosquito, as he put it. That's how close Donald Trump came to death. That's how close all the people who want him dead came to achieving their aim. And it's not being reported like that. It's not being, it's, I mean, imagine how it would be covered if Kennedy, if a bullet, if Lee Harvey Oswald had fired in 1963 and Kennedy had moved his head and the bullet had just skimmed Kennedy's ear and then taken out some guy in the crowd on the other side. Imagine how the how different the coverage with it. Walter Cronkite and the rest of the gang would be going on how it wasn't just the president who dodged a bullet. We all dodged a bullet. This is, well, you know, the same thing just happened now. But because it's Trump, it's not even being reported like that. For the first day or two, they were simply reporting that Trump had said he'd been hit by a bullet. When you look at it, I think there are, I put it this way. I said, were they in on it, or are they just totally crap? And I don't think it's possible to look at the decisions that were made. For example, all the agents who sat and watched this guy come, go, come back, go away again, come back again, each time behaving more suspiciously. Second time he's got out his laser gizmo. The third time he comes back with a backpack, and they're all sitting around looking through the windows at him outside. Now, I don't believe that's normal. And Jeff, you can feel free to correct me about that. But I've certainly been told that that is not in any sense normal procedure. You have someone somewhere up the chain has told them to react that way. Now, let's just suppose this story about the Iranian plot to kill Trump is true. I'm thinking that's just some flim-flam that's been thrown out there. I figure they'd like to kill Trump. They'd like to kill Trump since he's killed Soleimani and would take their opportunity. Whether they actually had a specific plan to off Trump that is new, that is actionable, I think that's a slightly different matter. But let's suppose, for the sake of argument, that it's real, that there's a real Iranian plot to get Trump. So you see some goofball with a rangefinder, and then he comes back with a bulky backpack, and you think, wait a minute, what's going on here? I can see some guy back in Washington saying, whoa, hold on, boys, let's not intercept him. He could lead us to Mr. Big. He could lead us to whichever big shot Ayatollah is behind this, who might be out in the parking lot. He's the big mullah with the turban and the beard. This might just be his patsy. And so if we just keep an eye on this guy, he might lead us to the big shot Ayatollah. I can believe that up to a point. I can't believe it to the point where he's climbing up the ladder, taking position on the roof. People are yelling and screaming that there's a guy on the roof and nobody's doing anything about it. It's more difficult to put an innocent interpretation on that. And Jeff, again, with no disrespect to your agency, I don't disrespect, in the generality of things, a lot of grade schools, a lot of universities, a lot of hospitals, all the caring professions, but all those, not all of them, but multiple examples of those institutions have been revealed in the last couple of days to be full of teachers and doctors who are actively urging and salivating for the death of Trump. Donald Brockhausen, a medical assistant with Smithtown Family Medicine affiliated with Northwell Hospital. If at first you don't succeed, try again. And Northwell is now saying, well, he's not actually an employee with us, you know. Okay, he's affiliated with them. But, just on some contract basis or whatever. And then, Cass McCloyd-Skinner, the director of the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Allison Scott, a teacher at Ardmore High School in Oklahoma, wish they had a better scope. The superintendent says, I will be taking her teaching certificate. She will no longer be teaching in Oklahoma. She's a nice teacher at a high school, Ardmore High School in Oklahoma. Sean Rorp Consavage, the mayor of Burnville, Pennsylvania, posted hashtag Pennsylvania Proud, try harder. And he says, or she says, or whatever, he says, I didn't take it down and I have zero intentions of resigning. There isn't a way for you to have me removed from office. Arturo Martinez, a sergeant with the Dallas Police Department, aim better. He's been placed on leave. Jennifer Ripper, a teacher at Semba Elementary School in Jefferson County, Colorado, replying to someone saying, damn it, they missed. My thoughts exactly. I could go on and do these right up until the top of the hour. As I said, these are the caring professions. These are the nice people, teachers, doctors, nurses. And they're all salivating over the death of Trump and saying, ooh, try again. Too bad they weren't a better shooter. On and on and on. Amanda Brewer, public school counselor from Boonville Elementary, Yadkin County, North Carolina. I'm disturbed by the fact, I'm disappointed the shooter missed. And she apparently has been forced to resign. Jennifer Morales, an attorney with the Iowa State Public Defender's Office. Damn it, they missed. I could do this to the top of the hour and we needn't do anything else. So here's the thing with, you know, respect to Secret Service personnel and everything. Is it, given that there's no difficulty finding people bemoaning the fact that the guy missed in your local grade school, in your local hospital. I've just done the American ones, but I'm not even talking about from foreign countries. There's a professor at the University of British Columbia who did the same thing. There's a petty officer with the Royal Canadian Navy who did the same thing. I could, but I don't even have to go to foreigners. I could just do it with American teachers, American nurses, American doctors till the top of the hour. Is it then so hard to imagine that there are people who feel the same way in the federal bureaucracy and actually quite high up in the federal bureaucracy? And when they hear that something, and if they're in a position to give orders and they hear that something, for a start, you know, let's walk it back to why they denied RFK, whose dad and uncle took bullets for their country, why they denied him Secret Service protection until after this event. Because they don't want him to feel safe. They're not saying they're going to come up with a plot to kill him, but if they're like a lot of people these days. They don't want to actually go to all the effort of pulling the trigger themselves, but they're happy for somebody else to do it. And that's basically why they don't want these guys to feel secure. So they figure it's to their advantage for RFK to be fearful. Okay, so they didn't give him any Secret Service protection. Now you have Trump. He's not an independent third-party candidate or anything like that. He represents your explicit political opposition in a two-party system. And they kept dialing back his, oh yeah, we're taking away the experience, guys, and we're giving you all these 5'2", eyes of blue, good cheek, good cheek, good cheek, who little Keystone Chorus girls who can't holster their weapons. We're giving you them instead. Why? For the same reason. They don't want him to feel safe. So they're dialing it back. Yeah, we used to move in the trucks to block some of these lines of sight from low buildings. And we're not going to bother with that this time. Yeah, we haven't got time to do that. It's not possible to believe all this was accidental. And so when some guy shows up, is it really difficult after all those examples I just gave you from people with respectable jobs for the government, teachers, public defenders? Is it so hard to believe that those people don't also exist in the big security bureaucracy? It's not. It doesn't disparage anything you did up until 2002 in the 90s and 80s, Jeff. But it does suggest that the people who want Trump dead seriously want him dead. Seriously want him dead. Jamie Marsh says, Mark, with a major overhaul, I think maybe the Secret Service could be salvaged. But I don't think that's the case with the FBI and CIA. They need to be completely dismantled. Vivek Ramaswamy said recently he'd like 75% of the federal administrative state to be removed as part of a Trump presidency. While that sounds about right, I'd settle for 50%. My question for you is, assuming we could get rid of the FBI, CIA, and the dozens of other alphabet soup American law enforcement agencies, what would we replace them with? Would one umbrella federal law enforcement agency make sense, or would that just ultimately make matters worse? Thanks, and God bless you for all of your work. I certainly think we could use fewer. As I've always said, you know, when there were those 51 intelligence heads who wrote that letter saying that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation, right? People think, oh, wow, that's pretty. I mean, it must be Russian disinformation if no fewer than 51 intelligence agency heads say so. No, the normal reaction to that is, why the hell do we have 51 intelligence agency heads? I've talked about this before. The number of people with a security clearance in America is up around 5 million. It's the population of Norway or New Zealand, right? How is that in anybody's interest, right? How many people, for example, I was talking about the teachers at the grade schools, I was talking about these doctors at hospitals. How many, when you've got an so-called people with the security clearances of 5 million, how many of them do you think want Trump dead? So I would be in fact, I certainly think certain ones, I don't think the CIA functions. I think the CIA should be much smaller and much realer instead of a bunch of flabby-assed idiots sitting around in Langley, Virginia, monitoring emails all day long. I think that's completely useless. The FBI is different, I would say, in that it is almost... my view, for example, the FBI has been hired to investigate what went wrong, right? If you were really interested in knowing what went wrong, why would you hire the FBI, the same FBI that brought us Operation Crossfire Hurricane, Peter Strzok and his paramour, Lisa, whatever her name was, why would you get them to investigate what went wrong with the Secret Service? Why would you get the FBI, the same FBI, for example? Because this is part of what happened Saturday is part of a pattern that actually goes back a few years now. The Las Vegas shooting from the Mandalay Bay Hotel was a big deal for a couple of days. A big deal, the biggest deal, a big, big, big single shooter mass murder. And his home is whatever it was, 50 miles away from Vegas. And the FBI don't secure the home. So whatever it was, a week after the Mandalay Bay shooter takes out all these people in Vegas, someone mysteriously breaks into his home, the home that hasn't been secured by the FBI. I don't even need to get into the agent provocateur stuff they're doing with things like the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping. The FBI should be disbanded. And again, to say something that Tucker and I briefly talked about once on air, just before the Sean Hannity show, where we both agreed that we couldn't stand these people. Oh, they're fine, upstanding G-men. They're just a few bad apples. No, they're not. They're corrupt from top to toe. And Sean Hannity said, I know that I'm proud to know these G-men and call them my friends. They've given me this little badge I wear. No, they're not. They're institutionally corrupt. And as I said, Tucker and I talked about it very briefly on air, about 5 to 9 or whatever it was one night. And Mead Cooper, the senior executive vice president for primetime at Fox, called up, I think it was the next day, and said on no account to do that again. Okay, because, yeah, we love our, no. Eric Dale says, Mark, am I the only one who thinks it's a little suspect that this Iranian assassination plot is only now coming to light after the failed shot on Trump? Why would Iran risk a hot war with the United States over the one Republican least likely to order a direct attack on them, especially since Lindsey Graham is presumably much more hostile and lightly guarded? It seems to me to be at once an obvious attempt at distraction, while actually quite effective to those who are inclined to think an open war with Iran is just the bee's knees. Yeah, I think that's very interesting. If you recall, the Iraqis tried to take out George Bush Sr. While he was visiting Kuwait, during the Clinton administration, and Clinton bombed Iraq for that. But what was interesting is we knew all the after what they did, the details of it came. This seems to me a little too coming right after the our Secret Service agents aren't allowed to stand on sloped roofs. It seems to me to be a little more, a little too obvious then. But as I said, if we take it for, let's take them at their word that they were seriously responding to a credible threat from Iran. How did they respond? They responded by taking away from Trump all the experience, guys, and giving him the 5'2" eyes of blue Keystone Chorus girls who come halfway up his chest, so they leave a much clearer shot for anyone minded to blow his head off on live TV. This is Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A. Let's pause, shall we, from the passing sheriff. Oh, no, we don't do that anymore, do we? We've moved all the music on this show over to Serenade Radio, Saturdays at 5 p.m. London time, in order to free up more time here to talk about who is 2 points up in Iowa, even as the Secret Service guys sit around watching the high school misfit lean his Home Depot ladder up the wall. It is 25 to 4 North American Eastern Time. That is 25 to 9 British Summertime. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. And again, I want to emphasize, I'm not talking about anyone who served. I've seen all those, you know, Clint Eastwood movies, In the Line of Fire, the old warrior. He was there at Dealey Plaza, 1963. Feels bad about it half a century later, but he's still there doing. I've seen all those things, and I'm happy to accept all that in the context of the times, but it was a fiasco. And it might just be a fiasco, as Veronica in Auckland says, simply on because of my other line, nothing works anymore. Just like Kabul was a fiasco, just like Uvalde was a fiasco. So now Butler, Pennsylvania is a fiasco. It might just be fiascos all the way down. But in the Uvalde Police Department, there were guys who served honorably in the 50s and 60s. In Kabul, there were Americans who did great things in Afghanistan in the 1950s when they were building dams and all the rest of that thing. But the fact of the matter is, it's fiascos all the way down. Kabul, Uvalde, and Butler, Pennsylvania right now. Denise O'Leary, a compatriot of mine, and always glad to hear from her, says, my own view, why the debate about whether it was a lone shooter versus a Secret Service plot? Why choose? If the Secret Service despised Trump, as so many who have iron rice bowls in the government do, security might be disastrously deficient, as it was. Sooner or later, some lone rando strikes. There must be thousands of friendless guys in the US who are computer nerds with a passion for shooting games. Secret Service would not need to bother selecting or grooming one. They will, of course, just kill the self-chosen one later in any event. So much went wrong, and yet no heads roll so far. That's a tell. Stein is right. The US is on the brink. She was apparently assured that if she, the head of the Secret Service, that if she just went out on TV and bollocksed her way through it, her job was safe. She was assured that by Mayorkas, apparently. So, you know, that's why the reminds me, the sloping roof thing reminds me of some awful hack lawyer I was up against once who said, well, nothing was going his way. He was losing on every front. And at some point, I can't remember even how we got into this, but the question of radiators came up, and he said, Mr. Stein is well known for his antipathy to radiators, and the sloping roof is basically falls into that category. But here's the issue. You're right that it can just be the fact that they strip back, they dial everything back until somebody like this guy comes along, and then they do what they always do. They kill him afterwards so that we can never find. And now we don't know his motives. No, because he's the only 20-year-old on the planet who isn't into social media. He's got no social media. You said friendless guys were computer nerds with a passion for shooting. Oh, yeah, well, you think then he'd be part of some groups with other friendless guys on the internet? No, he's not. He's doesn't have a manifesto. He doesn't have a TikTok video. He doesn't have an Instagram post. He's like the guy in Las Vegas who also had no profile on the internet. No one knows anything about him. And it's very funny because, you know, if you read any third-rate spy thriller or watch any third-rate movie, one of the things they do when they're constructing the cover for the guy these days, so they say, oh, we're going to put a man. What's that one? Was it John le Carré? I watched the film version of it with Hugh Laurie the other night. Hugh Laurie is some big international criminal type figure. And they decide to put some guy in there inside his organization. And what they do is they don't do what this killer at Butler did and the killer at Las Vegas did, where you have guys who just aren't on the internet at all, which is weird. So what they do, they create just a little enough of an internet presence to confirm whatever the cover story is, right? So they'll create like a little fakey fake website that shows the guy worked in a butcher's shop in 1997 or whatever. There's none of that with these guys. They're blown away, and then, have we got like a picture of him on Facebook? Oh, no, nothing. Interesting. As I said, they cover that one better in the third-rate thrillers. Greg Warren says, so we are now in the situation where it appears that officials in the United States government have set out to murder the opposition leader. I've heard the term stochastic terrorism bandied about, where the public atmosphere has been so contrived by the government and the media as to make the murder of Donald Trump more or less inevitable, and still they failed. Can it be that the reasons that the Democrats so vilify Vladimir Putin is nothing more than professional jealousy? Say what you like about Vlad, but if he wants you gone, you're gone. Yeah, you know, that was a point that Trump actually made when someone said to him, well, Putin kills a lot of people. He goes, our guys kill a lot of people too. And that's interesting to me, for example. No one in the government, and this has come up in various appellate court decisions and things recently, Supreme Court, you know, the January 6th guys, where the laws were perverted and twisted in order to get the January 6th guys into prison. Now, there's been an extraordinary number of suicides from those targeted by the January 6th prosecutors. Do you think anybody there has a sleepless night over that? Take the skedaddle out of Kabul, where Thoroughly Modern Millie and the rest of the geniuses couldn't forego droning an entire family of the world's most photogenic Afghan moppets on their way out the door. Well, it wasn't covered in the American media. I am familiar with it because I watched Yalda Hakim interview the little girl. She's the Islamo-totty at the BBC World Service. I watched her interview the kid's uncle about it. They were wrong, okay? They figured after the shootout at the airport, they needed to show that they're the tough, even though they're skedaddling, they're the tough guys. So Thoroughly Modern Millie and the gang decide to drone somebody. And instead of, the guy they intended to drone was at 27 Sword of the Infidel Slayer Street. But instead they droned the photogenic Moppets at 23 Sword of the Infidel Slayer Street. Just the usual American incompetence. But do you think anyone who was responsible for droning those kids... I'm not really in favour of droning, by the way, because I think it makes things like that more likely. You know, it's one thing, like in the old days, you'd actually have to run your bayonet through the kid. And a lot of people might balk at that. But do you think any of those people responsible for the droning of the Afghan kids feel bad? Oh, I can hear all the Constitution. Oh, yeah, but that's different because they're foreigners. So who cares? Yeah, well, that's not how it works, because interestingly, since the COVID made it explicit, the entire 24/7 war on terror apparatus is being turned not on jihadists in the Hindu Kush, but on the American people. So, for example, what happened on Saturday is that this poor volunteer fire chief, a genuine public servant, not like the ersatz public servants in Washington, but a genuine public servant, 50 years old, Cory Comparatore. As I said, Trump is going to be attending his funeral on Saturday. He's dead. He's dead. Because the United States government had 3 hours notice of this guy. And then a final half hour where they're all watching him. And then as we learn now, because the only people, telling the truth about this are the local law enforcement guys and people in the Secret Service who are ashamed of their own agency and leaking pertinent details. But for example, we now learn about how that the local officer, the local municipal policeman, confronted the guy on the roof. They didn't have a ladder or anything. So there's two of the guys, two municipal officers, and one of them hoists the other one up so he can hang on to the edge of the roof, at which point the guy, the shooter, sees him and turns and levels the gun at him, and they quickly, the guy on top falls 8 feet to the ground, and the other guy does, and both of them go on the what is supposed to be the channel that everyone is connected to, and they say there's a shooter on the roof. Now, as I said, as their boss, their local boss, the Pennsylvania guy, said, that's the channel everyone's on. And at that point, they should have hustled Trump off stage. They knew there was a shooter on the roof. The guys with him there knew there was a shooter. Now, who told them not to hustle him off stage? What's going on here? Because the official version doesn't make sense. The official version does not make sense. Idaho Bob says, "Hi Mark, during last week's Q&A, you alluded to a single prediction you missed from your demographic bestsellers. Are you willing to tell us what that prediction was?" No, it wasn't a prediction. What I meant was I got one thing wrong in America alone. And what I got wrong was that I thought America was serious, that you wouldn't launch this so-called war on terror if you just intended to run around Afghanistan ineffectually for 20 years And then 10 minutes after you leave, there's no trace you were ever there, up to and including the pride flag you're flying from the United States Embassy. What I got wrong was that I thought America was serious about the war on terror, and it wasn't serious. And again, that comes back, you know, to what's going on here. Going back and forth with Jeff Estes about the Secret Service. The Secret Service which it wasn't in Jeff's day. It was part of the Department of the Treasury. Now it's part of the Department of Homeland Security. Well, the Department of Homeland Security are the people who've opened the borders. They're the people who just let everybody walk in to your country, millions and millions of them. And every couple of days, somebody reports a story where there's somebody who's been gang raped, there's somebody who's been stabbed, there's someone who's been murdered by someone who shouldn't even be in the country. And again, I made the point on Tucker years ago that every society has its share of murderers, rapists, stabby people. They don't need to import. That's one of the jobs Americans will do. That's one of the jobs Swedes will do. That's one of the jobs Slovaks will do. Whichever country you're in, you don't need to import foreigners to do that. Yet Mayorkas, the Department of Homeland Security, which is on permanent orange alert, and does that make sense? You're on permanent orange alert if you want to fly back and see Granny for Thanksgiving, but there's no orange alert at the Rio Grande. Does that make sense? He let in all these people, and evidently he doesn't. Mayorkas doesn't have any sleepless nights about the young women who are gang raped because of what he's done. So why would he care about a dead fireman? You know, it's a heartless government. They don't think, and for whatever reason they're doing this, the human quality, if you think anyone feels bad about Cory Comparatore, I'm delighted that Mrs. Comparatore refused to take Joe Biden's call, particularly in light of what we found out since Saturday. Because it's not, as I said, it's at the very minimum, it's negligence leading to death. They were willing to do, the Secret Service did not a thing until the guy actually opened fire on Trump and Cory Comparatore and the other guys. And by the way, he died a hero, Mr. Comparatore. He died shielding his wife and daughters from the gunman allowed by your government to climb up to the roof and confirm rangefinder and everything. He had all the time. Once they'd The local cops had fallen to the ground and called in the gunman on the roof. At that point, they know there's a gunman on the roof, right? And the people, nobody does anything. Nobody does a thing until the guy is fired. I think it was 8 rounds. You know. And so I'm not inclined to say, well, the Secret Service did a great job here, there, whatever, you know. Something sick is going, and nobody wants to think like this. You don't want to actually think that you have a government. You're supposed to be a self. This is where all the, this is one for you, your constitution waivers, right? The guys who want to jump up and down waving, you go, we're not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic. As you know, I think that's a silly and parochial argument because Canada, we're not a democracy, we're a constitutional monarchy. All countries, unless you have direct democracy of the kind that Switzerland has, and even they have mediating structures on pure democracy. So it's a stupid and parochial point. But I'll entertain it for a change because I'm mad about this. And in fact, I haven't felt safe in America since I was denied medical treatment at the University of Vermont Medical Center, and everyone was under explicit instructions when I was in Washington, D.C., that they were to put me on the first flight up to Montreal if I was taken ill there, because I didn't want the same thing happening in the District of Columbia. I haven't felt safe in this country. And you certainly shouldn't feel safe if you have a government that is prepared in the interests of some scheme or some folly, to put it more mildly, that we don't yet know, to sacrifice someone like Cory Comparatore. But to pick up on this, we're not a democracy, we're a constitutional republic. You're a post-constitutional ersatz republic. That's the reality of it. But the democracy element is interesting because America actually is super democratic. If you live in a New Hampshire township, as I do, you can vote for everything. You can vote for your select board. You can vote for your town clerk. You can vote for your town treasurer. You can vote for your sexton. You can vote for your overseer of the poor. You can vote for the historical commission. You can vote in one little crummy town of a few hundred people. You can vote for whatever it is, 140 different positions, right? And a sort of similar thing applies as you waft up through county and state level. Then you get to the federal level, and you, the American citizen, can vote only for two people in the executive branch, the president and the vice president. That's it. Everybody else in the executive branch is appointed. And that in itself, constitutional republic. I don't think this is the kind of constitutional republic the founders would have intended, where you have people like Fauci, who holds the same position since the Nixon administration. I don't think that's what they thought would be their definition of a constitutional republic. But what it means as a practical matter is you'd have to, now that government's gotten this big, you'd have to be able to, I'm going to be elected president and then I'll put my own people in. Really? How many millions of your own people do you happen to have? Because the fact of the matter is, two people in the executive branch are elected by you, the American citizen. All the rest are appointed, and sometimes, you know, they were appointed several presidents ago, and they're very difficult to get rid of, and particularly if you don't have a culture of accountability. So we're now supposed to put up with this woman who's running the Secret Service, and okay, Trump might get rid of her if he wins in January, just like he got rid of James Comey, which didn't work out too swell for him. In the fullness of time. So, yeah, I'll entertain that. It's not a democracy when you get to the executive branch. Two people and all the millions, they look on these two people as, you know, a brief disturbance. Every 4 years, and fortunately, to get to the every 4 years, you have to campaign for 2 years, makes it even less consequential. And they get elected. And meanwhile, there's millions and millions of people, including whoever gave the order to do nothing about the guy with the rangefinder, the guy with the Home Depot ladder climbing to the roof, right? He's one of those ones. You don't elect that position. I'm not even sure you can fire him. Nobody gets fired, do they? Benjamin Bumgardner says, "Hi, Mark. Hope you're well and getting stronger." I'm not really. I may sound a little stronger than usual just because I'm very annoyed. I'm upset. I think people like Cory Comparatore are very real to me in the same way that the girls of Rotherham are real to me. I find it weird the way the more we talk about compassion, the less we actually have any. Everyone's advertising their compassion. Everyone's advertising it all the time. But if Hundreds and hundreds of girls are raped in a Shropshire town. Sorry, I'm too busy advertising my compassion actually to have any. That's a big part of the problem. I don't think Cory Comparatore should be dead. And when you hear about how he died, in the last seconds of his life, he has the instinct to protect his wife and daughters from that guy's bullets. Well, where was the Secret Services in, if this is all innocent, where was the Secret Services instinct over the preceding 3 hours? If it's just a good faith mistake. Oh, he just seemed, we thought, you know, maybe he's a guy who collects rangefinders. Maybe he wanted, there was somebody, there was a fellow rangefinder collector who was going to the rally and they wanted to compare rangefinders. Even if we were to accept that these are good faith mistakes, the human consequences mean that that bloody awful, useless diversity hire of a Secret Service director should be gone. Mayorkas should be gone. I've been saying this stuff in my American columns because I'm Johnny Foreigner and I'm feeling more foreign by the bloody day. Since September the 17th, 2001, when in my American column that week, it was in the Chicago Sun-Times, I linked to it the other day. It was in the Chicago Sun-Times, Washington Times, a few other papers, but in the Chicago Sun-Times, I was 6 days after 9/11, I'm staggered that everybody's still in position. And what came out years later, one of the guys is calling, I think it's the FAA or someone like that, and says, I think you're going to have to do blah, 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 whatever it is. These are the audio tapes of what happened on 9/11. And the girl goes, I'm sorry, everybody's just left the room. They all failed. All your big alphabet agencies failed. You just think, they all failed that day. Let's just add to them so there'll be even more alphabet agencies to fail the next time round. Peter Marsh says, hi, Mark, I'm half joking, but do you still think that Oswald shot JFK? If it happened today, I'd be open to some conspiracy theories. What a mess. How could it have gotten this far? Could we have stopped it? How? Any ideas? If you're talking about JFK, again, that depends on who you talk to and who you believe. I remember having a very long conversation with Pierre Salinger, who was JFK's press secretary, who was most indignant at the suggestion that there was any government involvement in the assassination of his friend. And I don't, you know, I don't pretend to know what's going on there. But again, I think if you look at it this way, that the US government had just been responsible for the deaths of the Vietnamese president, whatever it was, I think 6 weeks beforehand, autumn of 1963. And it requires a hell of a leap of faith to think that your government's happy to go around killing all these foreigners, but that at a certain point it won't be willing and won't be similarly indifferent to your death. And that's what's going on here. That's why they're indifferent to Cory Comparatore. You know, we have this war in Ukraine that is going to be, demographically fatal for the Ukrainian people if it goes on much longer. The slaughter that's going on there, and they're now shooting deserters and people who don't want to be called up because they're calling up people who are sick and middle-aged and whatever now. They're blowing up recruitment centers and all the rest of it. They firebombed some recruitment center in Ukraine. The longer this war goes on, there aren't going to be any, they're not going to be any Ukrainian men in Ukraine. Because it's the first war between two demographically exhausted countries, Russia and Ukraine. But Russia is a larger country, so just in hardcore numbers, it has more men to throw into this thing than Ukraine does. But the Ukraine, it's a tragedy for Ukraine, this. Ukraine's birth rate has collapsed just during the course of the war because there's no men to impregnate any Ukrainian women. Ukraine already had deathbed demographics from which no recorded society has ever been known to recover. This is like an endlessly extended going out of business sale. But you look at Victoria Nuland and Robert Kagan, and if they don't care about... Victoria Nuland was promising, she said confidently 2 days before this thing happened, oh, Trump isn't going to be president. So if that's what Putin's banking on, he's in for an unhappy surprise. That's Victoria Nuland and Robert Kagan, and that's okay. It's other people's lives, and they're indifferent to the huge mountain of corpses piled up in the name of a foreign policy that has basically destroyed US dominance in the world. They're completely indifferent to that. So do you think they care about dead firemen in Pennsylvania, these kind of people? I shouldn't think so. I'd be very surprised if they cared a whit or a jot about it. David and Jane Van Gend, or possibly Van Gend, write from Toowoomba down under and say, "Hi, Mark, we've been club members forever, but limited by the unconvivial Australian time zone. Tonight, we are able to listen live from residually Anglo-Saxon London." Really? You found a residual Anglo-Saxon in London? It is a majority non... What do they call the category? Non-white British. It means that I think English, Scottish, Irish, Welsh are headed down to something. I think they're below 30%, headed down to 20% in that city. "We want to register our thanks for your being one of the last great prophets of the West. A non-assassination question. Do you think the overtly sectarian branding of the Muslim vote here in the UK and the same more recently in Australia will have any cultural identity rousing effect for residual Christian nations, or is that residue past rousing?" Well, I saw a piece by the editor of The Spectator. Since you happen to be in London, you can stroll to your nearest newsstand, if they've still got any, and actually buy it. The Spectator, it's this week's Spectator, and Fraser Nelson wrote a piece about how Britain has the strongest multi-faith democracy in the world. Well, one reason, that, whether or not that's true, but that's because most countries don't want to be multi-faith democracies. There's 200 countries in the world. 60 of them belong to the Organization of the Islamic Conference. I think it's 58 or something. And they don't want to be multi-faith, they just want to be Muslim, and they're doing a grand job at just being Muslim. So this is a competition that most countries don't want to enter. But it was interesting to me, he was looking at, how many, whatever there are, there's now 26 Muslim MPs in the House of Commons, and isn't this wonderful, is all this kind of stuff. Well, four of those Muslims, as you said, have been elected on an explicitly on this new Muslim vote force. They decided the Labour Party was insufficiently pro-Muslim, so they stood as Muslims seeking the Muslim vote, and they elected four of their members to Parliament. But what was interesting to me about the Fraser Nelson piece is that he's a conservative editing a conservative publication. And this sappy happy talk is what the wanker thinks is the role of a right-of-centre publication. The world's oldest magazine happens to be right-of-centre. And right-of-centre say, oh, what's so good? Wasn't it great, you know, the fact that the king, instead of being defender of the faith, wants to be defender of faiths in general? Isn't that so speaks so well for him? And it's great to just have more imams at the coronation. No, it isn't, because it's not static. So it will be as it is everywhere else, such as I like to mention a lot, Alexandria, which was also multi-faith at one point. And as I said, eventually Islam becomes king on a field of corpses. So by the time people, I agree with you. I think people, I like when my friend Ava Vlaardingerbroek, one of the things I like about Ava is she takes faith seriously. She's converted to Catholicism. And Ava thinks that actually, unless there's a recovery of Christianity in Christendom, eventually the stronger forces will win, even as these prancing ninnies like Fraser Nelson are going, oh, isn't it great the way we're so multi-faith? Yes, it's had a bit of an impact. We can't really have freedom of speech anymore because the Mohammedans are a bit excitable, but it's just wonderful to be in a multi-faith society. It's not really a good idea. Wanda Sherratt says, head of the Secret Service Kimberly Cheadle says the buck stops with her. Hillary Clinton declared that she took responsibility for the Benghazi debacle. Then they sit back and think that this discharges their obligation, and why can't we just leave them alone? Does anyone in the West have any concept of responsibility that goes any further than reciting a ritual incantation? No. No. Once upon a time, the expression "the buck stops here" came into being because that was where the buck stops. Now it's just an expression you say as the buck sails smoothly past you, leaving you entirely undisturbed. That's the word. She should be gone. I made the same point I made in my column of September the 17th, 2001, with reference to the Argentine invasion of the Falklands. And Lord Carrington, lovely man, agreeable company, rather amusing, was the Foreign Secretary. And Sir Humphrey Atkins was the Lord Privy Seal. And there was another chap who was the Minister for Latin American Affairs. And they all resigned because, as Lord Carrington said, there had been a British humiliation in the seizure of the islands, and somebody had to use Hillary Clinton's words and Lord Carrington's words, take responsibility for it. So he took responsibility for it, and he resigned. And that is not going to happen here. This is outrageous. When you look at the Reagan shooting 43 years ago, it was kind of a different world. He comes out of whatever hotel that was, the Hilton, was it? There's all these people on the street because they don't close any of the surround. In those days, they didn't close, you know, for 50 miles around, close every street. So the guy could get up close and can fire a revolver at President Reagan. 43 years later, and 23 years after 9/11, in a country that's on permanent orange alert, in a country where even to be ushered into the presence of your chief of state, you have to provide your social security numbers or whatever. So we have all these 43 years of stuff, 43 years of ever increasing security protocols. And yet a guy can spend hours prancing around the site of the Trump rally. He's observed 3 hours before the shooting by the Secret Service. And then they watch him in real time for half an hour, preparing to do what he does, going up on the roof. Then he's interrupted by a couple of small town coppers. They fall off down from the roof, but they contact the channel that everyone is supposed to be monitoring and paying attention to. Oh, and still the people with Trump do nothing about it. That is a humid. If you accept it was a good faith error, that is, in Lord Carrington's words, a humiliation for the world's most lavishly funded protection service. And she should be gone, and Mayorkas should be gone. But they're not going anywhere, are they? Not going anywhere. It's amazing to me, this. That's about it for today, I think, because I got a bit too excited. I'm mad about this, and I get upset. It's a condition of my admission to the United States by U.S. immigration that I'm not allowed to foment the overthrow of the United States government, which is a shame. Because I'm in the mood to foment, because I certainly think a government that enables what happened on Saturday should actually be dispensed with very swiftly. And that's why I don't like this thing. Oh, we're a constitutional republic, so we just, we're not a democracy, so we just elect two guys from the executive branch, and then all these others whose names we don't even know, in agencies we never heard of, they just cruise on regardless, because it's not important to them. I am in a fermenting mood, because it's not just because of that poor fireman Corey Comparatori or the other people injured, but even, you know, I've been in terrible health the last year and a half, and one of the problems I have is I've suffered some hearing loss in one ear, and it makes a difference to me, because I don't trust my, when I'm listening to tracks to pick out for my music show, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, that the orchestration sounds slightly wacky there. And I don't know whether that's just because of some my hearing problem. I'm not hearing the woodwinds in balance with the strings or whatever. So I'm aware that a slight injury such as, and his isn't, we don't know what that ear looks like under the bandage. But you don't have to have... you know, that in itself need not necessarily be a slight injury. And as I said, these reconstructions are horrifying. Somebody other than the goofball with no social media, no internet presence at all, somebody other than the goofball, was looking forward to seeing Trump's head explode on live TV. And they were actually, inches doesn't really do it. They were actually millimeters away from it happening. And if we don't take that seriously, we've got 4 months to go. And here's the, people have been asking me what I think about the J.D. Vance thing. Here's the thing. They tried to kill Trump. If he had appointed Nikki Haley or Marco Rubio as his running mate, they would think, oh, yeah, the urgency has gone off. Let's let Trump get elected. And then in early February, we'll poison the chocolate ice cream at the White House and Nikki Haley will take over. That would be fine. But one of the things that appointing J.D. Vance does is ensures that no one is going to want to take out Trump if he wins and he's re-inaugurated in January next year, because they're not going to want President Vance, which is what happens. So I think one of the consequences of this is that if they are going, and again, it's all gotten a bit complicated. The whole Adam Schiff has now called for Biden to step down and for someone else to be the nominee. But nobody really wants to be the nominee because Trump's on a roll at the moment. So why do you want to say, oh, yeah, if you're Gavin Newsom, why would you? Oh, yeah, I really would like to lose to Trump right now. That would work out really well for me. So it's looking more and more likely like that they'll be stuck with Biden unless. So this idea that there won't be more violence between now and November, I think violence is the way to bet. And I'm sorry to leave it on, but I'm disgusted that nobody is. As I said, if you look at those reconstructions, it was a split second from blowing their head off Donald J. Trump on live TV. And people should be taking that more seriously than they do. As I said, no music anymore. We've moved all that to Saturday's Serenade Radio. People were complaining. They want more time. You know, should he maybe have picked John Kasich for his running? But we are on Serenade at 5 p.m. London time on Saturday. That's 6 p.m. in Western Europe or 12 noon North American Eastern. Hope you'll join me this weekend. I've picked out some fun tracks, but that's going to do it for today. Stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen Cohen will round up the internet as only she can. And don't forget our brand new Tale for Our Time, airing nightly at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's midnight in the British Isles. And that is Bulldog Drummond, which is a cracking caper full of energy. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in. We'd love to have you. And don't forget, for the Stein Shy chum in your life, there's a Mark Stein Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free, stay well, and stay away from the U.S. Secret Service.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.